gentlemen, it's the Stephanie Miller Show. This is the Stephanie Miller Show. Good morning, all y'all. I'm John Fugelsang, filling in for Stephanie for the next 3 hours of your blissful American lives. I've been away for quite a while, and it's a pleasure to be back, joined, as always, from the West Coast Bureau by the great and brilliant Chris Lavoie.
Hola!
On the mic, and the one and only, the inimitable imitator, the architect, the Alpha and the Omega, the Ayatollah of rock and roller. He used to be the Quarrymen. Now he is the Beatles of celebrity voice impersonation. This is People of Earth, your Jim Ward. Good morning.
Good morning. Thank you, Mr. Birdsong.
We are joined, as always, by Travis Bone, T-Bone for you, Disco Trash, on the phones. You can talk to him at 1-800-STEPH-12, and he will put you through to us, because, oh my goodness, if I had to pick one show to fill in for, I'm thrilled it's this one.
Yeah, and you've kind of been on the road, so you haven't been able to open your mouth about all the things that have been going on in the news.
I really haven't. It's like every week I have to call Chris and say, oh, I can't do it this week. I'm in a prison. I'm in a homeless shelter. I've been doing a film for PBS for the past 2 months. I had 2 weeks off, and I spent that time in Mexico and doing a festival, and in L.A. doing some pilot tapings. That was the last time I saw you, Chris.
Yeah.
I've been making a movie for PBS about the American dream, and it's done by a two-time Oscar-nominated director who's won Emmys and Peabodys, and we have been on the road with a small seven-person documentary crew. And it's been retracing the journey Alexis de Tocqueville took in 1831 when he wrote Democracy in America and began the concept of the American dream and upward mobility. And the movie's been about what happened to upward mobility. What happened to the American dream? Is it still even alive? Is it accessible only for some? And we've talked to congressmen, homeless vets, millionaires, businessmen, and investors. We've talked with folks in their 60s who are going on food stamps for the first time and can't believe it. We've talked to people on Indian reservations and every level of society. I was in Blackwater State Prison in Pensacola 2 days ago. We've been in Detroit, New Orleans. And so I'm finally thrilled to be back, and what a great, great day to be back for, because I Alan Alda's here.
Yeah, we're going to have Alan Alda on the show today.
He'll be hosting the Homeward Bound Telethon benefiting soldiers with PTSD, a very underserved demographic, and he's going to be calling in around the 10 a.m. hour, East Coast, 7 a.m. West Coast.
Wow.
And then also a friend of mine, Zach Coplin, is going to be joining us this morning. Zach is from Louisiana. I first met him when I was hosting Viewpoint for the late lamented Current TV. We're still allowed to say those words, right, on the show?
Yeah.
Wow. Zach is the kid who challenged, the teenage high school student who challenged Bobby Jindal's Louisiana science education law. Hmm. This was the law that allowed teachers to bring in supplemental materials in science class. So if a student wanted to talk about creationism, the teacher can talk about creationism in science class because it's protecting their First Amendment rights. And I'm thrilled to have Zach calling in because it's a very insidious law, and it's designed to make Christians look dumb. Mm-hmm. So we care about that. Jackie Schechner will be calling in to talk about health care around the 7:30 a.m. hour Pacific time. And then the great Tina Dupuy will join me here in the New York Bureau for the final hour. And
you
I'm glad
lucky
Jackie's,
bastard.
I know. Well, I'm glad Jackie's calling in to talk about health care because I wanted to bring this up with you guys. Mm-hmm. I want to thank all of our Republican friends for really telling me how important it is to reject public figures who lie. It is so important that we turn our back and shun and impeach and shame any public figures who lie to us, because lying is evil and wrong, and the liar must always be scorned. And of course, I'm talking about Rand Paul and 60 Minutes coverage of Benghazi. Rand Paul, of course, is very, very upset about the accusations of plagiarism. He plans on defending himself with a new speech written by his staff about Rand Paul's family dog, Checkers. So watch for that coming up later today. And by the way, we should note this. Let's get the Paul bashing out of the way early, gents. I hate to say it. You know, a lot of people are losing their jobs. It's a really rough economy here. And the Washington Times has decided to end Rand Paul's column because they found out he had lifted whole sentences from Forbes and other people's work for columns he submitted to them.
Whatever will we do? I thought you were talking about Paul McCartney. You interviewed him, you know.
And he's getting so defensive, too.
He's getting so
defensive. You're the one who's defensive. Shut up. That's basically what he's doing. Like, there are a lot of haters out there who are trying to get me.
Wah.
It's hilarious. And again, they say, we expect our columnists to submit original work and to properly attribute material, and we appreciate that the senator and his staff have taken responsibility for an oversight in one column. Of course, you know, Rand Paul probably doesn't know about any of this, I would assume. It seems like he just has someone else do his ghostwriting for him, maybe someone who wears Confederate wrestler masks.
Well, didn't his father get into trouble for kind of ghostwriting some of the things in his newsletters?
Well, actually, it's the beautiful irony of the whole situation is that Rand Paul claims something he didn't write was his, but Ron Paul claims something he did write wasn't his, and that's the beauty.
Perfect.
Google Ron Paul newsletter if you get a chance, folks, and read the disgusting racist invective that came from the pen of Ron Paul, or at least someone who signed his name Ron Paul at the end of all of these little newsletters. Now, Ron Paul, many wonderful qualities. I have a lot of respect for him. He's very honest on the drug war, very honest on the Iraq war.
And I love his wife's fish sticks, too.
You see what you did there.
He does have a fondness for appearing in front of Confederate flags, which you like. But yeah, and Ron Paul tried to say that the newsletter content wasn't his, and now Rand Paul is saying that the stuff that he didn't write was his. So it's beautiful, but fortunately we know that the Tea Party will completely expunge him and will turn their backs on him because the Tea Party can't stand it when Republicans do dishonest things.
Right. So we're going to have Alan Alda on. We've already had Meathead. Now we're going to have Hawkeye. It's 1973's version of Must-See TV.
Yes!
It's really thrilling. How excited are you? I met Alan Alda years ago when I was a teenager, and I saw him filming the movie A New Life that he directed in Washington Square Park with Anne Margaret, and I got to meet him, and it was just the biggest thrill as a kid.
Anne Margrock.
Oh, he was gorgeous then, too, by the way.
Well, yeah, I mean, she's gorgeous now.
Uh-huh. Yeah, just Jailhouse Rock. That's all I got to say. But, yeah, like, I was thinking about all the great films Alan Alda has done, especially with Woody Allen. I mean, you think back to Crimes and Misdemeanors and Manhattan Murder Mystery. And then what was the movie he made? I think it was Glass House, the movie he made. Alan Alda did a great prison movie back in the 70s with Billy Dee Williams that was terrific. And he has such an Oscar nominee for Martin Scorsese, of course, for The Aviator. So I'm really, really thrilled. I'm, of course, happy to talk about the work he's doing with the telethon, but I want to talk to him about, you know, a lot of his really important social work as an artist.
Yeah.
Well, here's the thing. Back in Vietnam, in the Vietnam War, they realized that having the war on TV was bad for morale and that people saw how ugly war was and it turned them against war. So Vietnam was the last time you ever saw footage from war on TV. Mm-hmm. And they tried to really, you know, dumb us down and make us think, you know, the whole Persian Gulf War attitude of
shock
the troops and don't ask any questions.
That's right.
But
you don't support the troops.
Yeah, right. But when I was a kid growing up, we had MASH on TV, sometimes 5 times a day in reruns. And MASH was there teaching America about how evil and petty and stupid and counterproductive and costly war is. And I know it's a comedy show, and the original idea was to have the Marx Brothers in All Quiet on the Western Front, but I think MASH did more for the anti-war movement during the 70s and 80s than just about anybody alive.
It was actually supposed to be about Vietnam originally, but they thought that was a little too close to home, so they moved it back to Korea.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, I like the original Robert Altman movie, but, you know, for most of us, we grew up on that TV show, and after that, you know, you've never seen an anti-war TV show before.
Nope.
Not really. And so, you know, and that show is unabashedly anti-war and showed the human cost of it, the grotesque stupidity of it. And, you know, so it's really a thrill to have him on because I think he did a lot of moral good for the country.
And the only way it could have aired, I think, at that time was to couch it as a comedy. You know, and it was funny, but wow, it covered some really deep stuff.
Mm-hmm. It's a great show, and a lot of great actors, too. And I know you guys have had Mike Farrell on the show.
Right.
My buddy and the hero of Death Penalty Focus for California. But it's going to be great to have Alda. And then Tina Dupuy in the last hour, and Jackie talking about health care, because,
why is that relevant? Is there some relevance to that? Have I been asleep for a month?
It turns out that if you're a president and you lie about weapons of mass destruction and thousands of soldiers meet their deaths, that's cool. But if you're a president and you make a promise and then the insurance companies are evil and make your promise not
sabotage
come true,
yeah,
you are a liar. You have to be destroyed. And that's what we've learned from our Tea Party friends. And I'd love to have some of them call us today at 1-800-STEP-12 because I've been spending a month in the deep south hearing this crap, and I'm over it. I'm over it, man. I've been seeing people without health care and how much people are suffering. And you know what? There are zero problems with the Republican health care plan website because they don't have one. They have no plan.
Right.
45,000 of your countrymen die every year due to a lack of coverage, and these guys are just fine with it. Am I wrong about anything?
Nope. No, I don't think so.
Okay, good. Well, I'm good. It's nice to be back in the preachy seat again.
Yeah, exactly. And you know what I'm excited about?
Tell
me. That you are going to be a part of Sexy Liberal Comedy Tour this coming year, and you're going to be a part of the one that's coming up in Seattle. Let's throw a little promo action.
If only there was a promo for this.
Wrapping up the Sexy Liberal Comedy Tour for 2013, the Emerald City is about to get a brand new dose of hilarity. Welcome back, Seattle. The Stephanie Miller Sexy Liberal Show returns to Seattle.
No, I've never been the kind of going for that sort of self-congratulatory hoopla.
Saturday, December 14th, the Paramount Theater welcomes the return of Stephanie Miller.
The greatest radio talk show host ever.
John Fugelsang and Hal Sparks in the plush and historic Paramount Theater, which has hosted Ella Fitzgerald and the Marx Brothers. The Paramount now welcomes Stephanie Miller.
I want you to meet a very charming lady.
And it's about time.
And her special brand of sexy liberal comedy. Tickets are available by going to stgpresents.org or the Paramount box office or sexyliberal.com. Don't miss this show December 14th.
What a festive day. This is
the Sexy Liberal Show at the historic Paramount Theater.
Good night, Seattle. We love you.
Oh, yeah.
That's right. So, Seattle, I want to see all y'all. You guys got to come. We had a great show there 2 years ago in the Moor. We sold that out twice. Over a year ago, we played Seattle last. So it's really, really exciting to do our special holiday show.
That's right.
Our first Chris McQuanzica extravaganza.
Yeah, absolutely. And you can get your tickets by going to sexyliberal.com.
It's going to be such a great show, and I'll be promoting the heck out of it because I'm just so excited. After a whole year of saying to Mama, are we going back on the road, Mama? And finally, the roofies worked.
Yes. And I'm excited to be going back because we're going to Phoenix in February, and I'm going to be appearing at that one because Phoenix is my second hometown.
I am so thrilled you're going to be there. It'll have been 3 years since we last played Phoenix, and I played the Orpheum with a solo show of mine last year, but it's a great theater, and I'm thrilled we're going back. And then where it all began, Madison. We're coming back in March for the big 1,000-day anniversary of the Sexy Liberal Tour.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely, and all of those tickets are available right this very second by going to sexyliberal.com.
And there'll be beer available at 8:30 in the morning.
In Madison, sure.
Fastest prologue.
Well, it's going to be fantastic. You know, I mean, 2013 was a year where everybody was crazy busy and we were all working for Current and we didn't really have time to do a tour. And it's been an off election year. Although I do want to talk to you guys about the election this week, but to come back in 2014, friends, it is going to be the most important midterm election of our lifetime.
Yep.
And the main thing is, you know, we got to get folks voting because they are deliberately trying to keep you from voting. When we saw Jim Wright not be able to register. The Voting Rights Act gutting was a deliberate plot, and it's not about keeping people from voting illegally. More people die in bathtubs every year than vote illegally. Mm-hmm. More people are killed by TVs every year than vote illegally. This is all about curtailing the vote, and it's not just black folks. They're going after seniors. They're going after college kids. Mm-hmm. They're going after poor people of all colors. And they're going after you. You know, it's in their interest to keep as few people voting as possible. That's why they killed the motor voter bill, which would have allowed anyone to register as soon as they got their driver's license. They don't want a high turnout.
That's
so right. I'm thrilled we're going to go on the road and do everything we can to get the vote out next year.
Welcome to the corporatocracy.
It is time. So great show. Guys, I want to hear your take on Election Day this week because I've been living in a van. And I want to hear from you guys when we come back at 800-STEPH-1-2. I'm John Fugelsang. Stick around, kids.
There's a tea party in her pants, and you're invited. Call now, 1-800-STEPH-1-2. Stephanie Miller. Stephanie Miller.
That's right, you have got the best of Stephanie Miller's love, but there's Valtrex for that. Good morning. This is the Stephanie Miller Show. I'm John Fugelsang, filling in for Steph all morning long, along with the great Chris Lavoy and Jim Ward in the L.A. Bureau. Hi, guys. Greetings from New York. What did you all make of Election Day this year? Were you as shocked as all the pundits were by the incredibly predictable races?
No. Yeah, back here in Los Angeles, we had no elections, and so it just felt like any other normal day here.
But don't you see any exciting new trends from the overwhelmingly predictable for weeks races?
Oh, God, no.
Oh, my God, I have these people, and they're my friends, and I love my pundits, but good Lord, folks, come on, we all knew how it was going.
Right.
I mean, it's great that Terry McAuliffe beat Ken Cuccinelli, I guess. I kind of think the Democrats would have gotten more mileage out of having a complete lunatic on an outpatient basis in the governor's mansion they could mock and raise funds off of for the next 6 years. But I'm happy for him.
But for the people of Virginia, in which I spent 8 years of my life,
I'm sorry.
Virginia's a great state. That's where my mom's from. All my family's there. My parents lived there for 14 years. I love Virginia.
I spent my formative years there. I went to high school there. And
That's where you were formed.
And I'm glad that they got someone, relatively sane instead of the cooch.
Oh, yeah. I mean, look, when he came out and said he wanted to ban all oral and anal sex for adults, gay and straight, I had to come out and say, I said it on Current, if you guys like sodomy, keep away from the cooch. And it's really, really true. So I'm very glad that happened. And, it would have been terribly entertaining. New Jersey, Chris Christie, not a huge surprise. Carla Buono, God bless her, a very, very nice politician who knew she was going in to be a sacrificial lamb. Mm-hmm. And her TV commercials, y'all didn't get to see them, did you?
No.
It was just like, it was a picture of Bono, and she says, "I'm not Bono," and then Sonny Bono, "I'm not Bono, I'm Buono." And it's like, oh, just make
really?
It stop. Just,
yikes.
Yeah. I was waiting for her to say, "I'm not a witch." It was just so sad.
Oh,
and,
God.
She got no support at all. No. It was just like,
And she let everybody know in her concession speech that she got no support.
Oh, please. The guy running against Walker in the recall got more support. He got a visit from Clinton.
Yeah.
I mean, no one actually stood up. And when you think about it, if that's the case, people who don't pay attention to politics all the time, which is most people, aren't going to vote for someone they know is dead in the water.
Right.
And sadly, a lot of people out there who think women should have the right to choose to terminate a pregnancy if they want, voted for a guy who wants to lock those women up someday. The important thing to remember is Chris Christie supports a repeal of Roe versus Wade.
Wow.
And the framing has got to be that, this is not a debate between abortion and no abortion. The pro-choice, pro-life debate is really a debate between safe legal abortion and unsafe illegal abortion, because it's not going away. It's still going to be around. And so the real argument for the Republicans is you guys just want to lock women up for this. Mm-hmm. And that's what Chris Christie's fighting for, as well as to not let gay people marry who they want. So,
that's right.
You know what? Jersey's better than that. But I think Christie's an amazing politician. He's a great public speaker. I think he's probably the one Republican who could beat Hillary Clinton. Fortunately, the Tea Party won't let that ever happen.
Hmm. Yeah. You know what? He's trying his damnedest to tack to the right.
Oh,
it rings false.
Yep. But he'll be doing it. He'll be tacking to the right until the nomination convention is over.
And the people of New Jersey are famous for their BS detectors. And so I think they're detecting it in him.
Well, yeah. I mean, look, he's a tough-talking guy. He's very charismatic. I love hearing him speak. And I'll be the first to say he's a much better public speaker than Mrs. Clinton. Having said that, Jersey, this ain't the guy you want.
No.
And he's going to show it. And the Tea Party will punish him for being a sane moderate. We'll be right back taking your calls after this, the Stephanie Miller Show.
Stephanie Miller.
I really need you to be on your game, A lot of our fans have gone through rehab, so they're much more critical.
It's the Stephanie Miller Show. Joining you bicoastally this morning, I'm John Fugelsang in New York, along with Chris Lavoy and Jim Ward in the L.A. Bureau. Good morning, gents.
Hola.
And we are talking about everything. We are talking about trans fat. We are talking about Arafat. We are talking about Chris Christie. It's going to be quite a show. I'm really delighted about this next guest. You guys may have heard of him, and if you watch Real Time with Bill Maher, you've seen him. He was also a regular on my show, Viewpoint, and one of my favorite activists out there right now. Zach Coplin was a teenager going to school in Louisiana when Governor Bobby Jindal gave us the beautiful new reality that is the Louisiana Science Education Act. This would allow teachers to bring in supplemental materials that would allow them to, in the interest of the First Amendment, explain creation science in science class. Zach was a teenager who stood up to this and became a very, very public activist. He's now a university student. And I had the pleasure to meet him in person last week when I interviewed him for the PBS film I'm shooting right now. And now I'm very happy to welcome to the show Mr. Zach Coplin. You're on the Stephanie Miller Show. Good morning.
Hey, John. Thank you so much for having me on.
Thank you. Zach, where are you going to school now?
So I'm currently at Rice, although I'm taking some time off right now to pursue activism full time.
Right on. Well, that's where all the money is. Zach, can you set this up for me? Because for folks who don't actually know, can you explain what the Louisiana Science Education Act is and how they sold it?
So the Louisiana Science Education Act was the first in this new wave of so-called academic freedom laws. And what it does is they allow teachers to bring in supplemental materials with virtually no restrictions on them to critique established science like evolution and climate change. Now, the scientists all agree overwhelmingly, 99%, and all the scientific evidence backs these theories. And so if you're going to critique them, you do it in a scientific setting in a peer-reviewed journal by real scientists. You don't do it through random supplemental materials in a high school science class.
Mm-hmm.
And we really know what this law is for because the sponsor, Senator Ben Nevers, said it was to have creation taught wherever Darwin theory was taught, and same with Governor Bobby Jindal, who said this is about having creation brought into public school science classes.
Right.
Now, it was sold under the whole guise of this is about academic freedom and critical thinking, that if we can bring in supplemental materials, it'll help students think more critically. Now, no one's opposed to critical thinking. That sounds good, but you don't need a law that mandates critical thinking in a high school science classroom.
Well, people who care about creationism are deeply invested in critical thinking, Zach.
I know. It's interesting that you see, on one side, you see the scientists who are opposed to this law, and on the other hand, you see the religious right who say this is all about teaching our kids to think critically. It's sort of curious when you see that.
Absolutely. But you know, Zach, I got to say, the folks that I've been talking with, a lot of the lovely conservative folks that I spend time with in Louisiana, were all quick to say, well, we're just teaching the controversy. But I thought there really was no controversy about evolution in the scientific community. Am I right?
There is none. It's actually, here's a good way to illustrate it. So the creationists, to make their controversy, have created this letter they call Dissent from Darwin. It's got about 700, 800 names last time I looked at it. Mm-hmm. Most of them are not biologists. Most of them are not well-known. And so they've got this list that they bring out to every hearing. And the National Center for Science Education, which is a wonderful organization, it fights creationism and climate denial in the schools all across the country. They've been urged to make a list, but they said science doesn't really work by making lists of how many scientists agree with us. I mean, I guess we could spend all our time collecting a list of 100,000 names, but it's sort of ridiculous because all overwhelmingly the scientists agree with us. And so what they did instead is create a list of scientists only named Steve who support evolution in honor of Stephen Gould. Their list is approaching twice the size of the Dissent from Darwin list. It has far more biologists and far more eminent scientists. And so it really proves the point that the scientific community is much more on the side of evolution and reality than creationism. And by the way, Steves are only about, what, 100th of the population? So that really illustrates that more than 99% of the scientists really are on the side of evolution.
Yeah, well, and also most Christians are too, and this is something that I like to point out. I mean, the Catholic Church has no issue with the theory of evolution and understanding science that way. Most Christians in America don't have a problem with science, and on a Christian level, and this is my big hang-up, if you're a follower of Jesus and the teachings of Jesus, what the hell does that have to do with believing in a talking snake? It is spiritually insignificant. Right? But this is just a minority of Christians. And again, I know they're not a minority in Louisiana, But when I talked to people about it, some of those who defended the law, Zach, said to me that this is a free speech issue because before this, if a student raised their hand in science class and said, but what about creationism in the book of Genesis? Well, Zach, that poor teacher had had their First Amendment rights taken away and would not be allowed by law to answer that question. Is that true?
So it's actually not true how that works, or it's a misunderstanding of how the First Amendment works. So that teacher, none of their First Amendment rights were stripped away. Outside of class, they could talk about it all they want. But as a government employee who signed a contract with the state of Louisiana, with the U.S. federal government that says, I will teach science, they're required to teach science. Now, creationism is not science, therefore it does not belong in that setting. You can talk about it in history and comparative religions and many other places, anywhere outside of school, in Sunday school. The teacher could go on Sundays and teach Sunday school, and no one's going to challenge their First Amendment right to talk about creationism. But in the science class, they are representing the U.S. government. And there's a funny part of the First Amendment that also creates a separation of church and state, that they're not allowed to bring their personal views in as representatives of the government and imply the U.S. government is calling creationism science. Because creationism is religion. It doesn't belong in science classrooms. So while they're on their government job as representatives of the United States government, they cannot do that.
But it does seem like they have some wiggle room on this, Zach, because the argument they'll make is that the teacher's not bringing in their personal views at all. They're explaining Genesis in case a student asks. Now, my concern is I'm guessing that none of these teachers are going to bring in supplemental material that would allow them to stand before a classroom and say there is but one God and that is Allah and Muhammad is his messenger. You know, like they're not bringing in other religions, mythologies, and creation stories. And again, I'm saying if you believe in you know Jesus, that's great. This is spiritually insignificant, has nothing to do with Jesus. This is talking snakes here. You know, I don't really understand how it seems like it's just Christian centered and Christian exclusive, and we know that's the only kind of supplemental materials the Louisiana Board of Ed will approve. Am I right?
I mean, so it is very Christian centered. There's one thing that's missing there. The religious right likes to claim that this all has to be state board approved. It actually doesn't. You can bring in anything you want and there's no restrictions. The only way that it gets removed from the classroom is if the state board gets a complaint and then there's an actual process that has to be gone through to remove the material. So it actually is, it's backwards. And now the process is fascinating in that you get set to this panel with five judges who are choosing whether the review materials are okay. And so one of those judges is appointed by your teacher who's using the bad materials. One of those judges is appointed by the creator of those materials. So that's two votes against you to begin with.
Right.
And then two judges are appointed by the Jindal-controlled Department of Education. So that's another two votes that are likely against you. The last vote comes from the person you appoint. So literally the only accountability is controlled by the people who are supporting creationism. And that's after the fact.
Wow.
If a young student would know how to complain, where it's a very ambiguous process and it's very hard to figure out.
It's brilliant. And again, this is all Bobby Jindal wants to run for president, and this is how he's going to earn his Tea Party bona fides. This is kind of like, to me, like one of the abortion laws. If it gets if it gets thrown out, they don't care. They just want to be able to tell the Tea Party they fought for it. But the big point I also heard a lot from our conservative friend, Zach, was that there have been zero complaints about it so far, so why are you Yankee liberals making a fuss about this? How would you respond to that?
So I guess there's the point I want to hit before I get to that. About Bobby Jindal running for president. Bobby Jindal is the least popular conservative governor in the country, Indiana.
Mm-hmm.
There's only 28% of the state who supports him. That's awful. And it's from policies like these, where he's compromising our kids' education and everyone sees it.
Mm-hmm.
That's why they don't like him. And so it does not seem like a sound strategy. If I were to advise Governor Jindal what he should do, he should follow his own advice, which is he said the Republican Party shouldn't be the stupid party. It's the sound advice. And he seems to be leading the charge in the opposite direction. That's the really big problem. Is if he doesn't want to be the stupid party, the easy way to start fixing that is repealing the creationism law that you passed.
Mm-hmm.
And so the question is there's been no complaints. I mean, that doesn't really indicate whether the law is right or wrong. So the law, if people like being taught creationism, that doesn't mean it's right. It's still wrong. But it's also sort of a misuse of how this whole process works. So you've got to take a student in Louisiana who first knows that creationism is wrong, which a lot of these kids are never going to have been told that you aren't allowed to be taught creationism. So you have to know it's wrong and know it violates their rights. That's already a high bar to start with.
Right.
Then they have to be opposed to it, because there's people who say, well, I'm not allowed to be taught creationism, but I still appreciate that being taught it, and I'm proud my teacher's standing up for that.
Right,
and that's a higher bar on top. And then the highest bar of all is, well, you have to know where to go to fight it and then be brave enough to do it.
And that's the trick, and it is going to take more young people like you, Zach, getting up there and being able to, you know, risk the scorn of their peers and community by standing up for science.
And that's the issue, though. Is like, there's parts of the state where there's been issues with separation of church and state, and the kid who stood up for the Constitution has found himself kicked out of his house, needed police protection at his graduation. There's real, and parts of the state that I assume are teaching creationism, there's real issues with kids standing up. And a lot of these students who might be willing to do that know that they could face their entire world being turned upside down for doing what they view as right.
Zach, we got to go. Can you tell us where people can follow you and keep in touch with your work?
So you can look at the work on creationism on repealcreationism.com. There's also a second issue we didn't really hit, but on school vouchers that are promoting creationism, creationistvouchers.com has a whole list of schools across the country receiving hundreds of millions in public money and teaching creationism.
Yep,
and then we're about to launch a new effort on science funding, and we'll be putting that out. It's under our campaign header, Second Giant Leap, that we'll be pushing in the next few weeks and months.
And Zach is ZACKKOPPLIN on Twitter. Look up his appearance with Bill Maher on Real Time. That was great. And Zach, next time I host, I'd love to have you back in to talk about the vouchers and about accelerated Christian education, which put in textbooks that the Loch Ness Monster exists, so evolution's a myth. So will you come back and join me again?
That'd be awesome. Thank you so much for having me on. It was great talking to you.
Thank you so much. And we'll be taking your calls when we return at 800-STEP-1-2.
I've never heard such a bunch of penny any dime a dozen two-bit half-wits exaggerating their enemies and bellyaching over the tiniest, stupidest personal problem.
It's the Stephanie Miller Show. Stephanie Miller. Stephanie Miller.
And that is Madonna with Express Yourself.
I thought it was Lady Goo Goo.
I actually like Lady Gaga a lot more than I ever liked Madonna, I gotta say. Can I go to gay prison for saying that?
I'm a little disappointed in her new album, though.
Gaga?
Yeah.
Well, I haven't listened to it.
Yeah, it's okay.
Is it a lot of songs about her?
Sure. Yes.
Because, you know, Eminem's new album is all about, you know, how incredibly awesome and successful and rich he is and how he's a victim. So I'm excited.
And how is that different from any other rap song?
I love him. I think he's great. But the victim bully thing in hip-hop is really old. and it's also really old in the Republican Party, where we get to play victim and bully you all we want. And that's why we're taking your calls today. And that wasn't much of a segue, but I'm new here. I'm John Fugelsang, filling in for Stephanie Miller, and we're taking your calls at 800-STEP-1-2. Before I take the first call, guys, back referencing Zach Copland there, It really was amazing to be in Louisiana and talk to people who see no problem whatsoever with teaching creationism science class. A lot of folks, you know, think we'll teach it in religion class and teach the debate in social studies, but I'm like, do you have a problem with teaching Darwinian theory in Bible class? Because that seems about fair.
Mm-hmm.
But this is what we're up against.
Yeah, I went to school in the South. You know, Southern Virginia is the South, and it doesn't surprise me.
And so the Earth is 5,000 years old, and all these.
Doesn't surprise me.
Well, 6,000.
Oh, 6,000. Well, that's completely
6,000. And in fairness, you know, Pat Robertson came out and talked about what bunk that was. And said how, you know, of course, it was a 400-year-old book that posited this theory that the Earth was 6,000 years old, and the creationists are now turning their back on Pat Robertson.
Wow.
Again, this is what you say to your Christian loved ones who believe in this stuff, because I don't even think the guys who wrote Genesis took it as literal fact. What has it got to do with Jesus? What has it got to do with Christ, with the message of Jesus outlined in Matthew 25 as taking care of the sick, taking care of the poor and visiting those in prison, being nice to people. Believing in a talking snake does not make you
right.
a better person.
Mm-hmm.
And if you believe,
I'm sorry, a lot of the Gospels were not contemporaneous accounts. They were centuries later after Jesus.
None of them were contemporaneous. So, yeah. None of those guys actually wrote the Gospels. They were
right.
written by the disciple of a disciple of Mark.
Disciple of a disciple.
And did you see that the Creationism Museum in Kentucky is having some money troubles, so they've had to install zip lines and stuff like that to get tourists back there?
Gosh. They're using science. They're using science.
Gravity. Yes.
Gravity's a myth. You don't need a line. Just jump.
And again, this is not Christian bashing to make fun of this, because this isn't Christianity. This is the book of Genesis. This is several thousand years before the brown-skinned hippie socialist Jesus shows up on the scene.
Exactly.
And again, if you believe it, you got to choose which version of creation do you believe. Because in Genesis chapter 1, it says that male and female were created simultaneously. In Genesis chapter 2, it says that man was made first, didn't have a mate, so God made all the animals to try and find him a mate. None of that worked out. I'd love to see that blooper reel. And then finally, God took one of Adam's ribs while he was sleeping and fashioned it into a woman, and that was Eve. So besides the fact that presumably God was making male and female of all the animals and figured out what he was doing wrong along the way, you got to pick which of these creation stories do you believe, and then you also got to believe the part that comes later in Genesis about the angels coming to earth, mating with human females, and their children being giants. Because that's really in there.
Yeah, well, the Nephilim.
Yes, exactly. So, you know, it's a science.
I subscribe to the theory that we were spawned by aliens who you know, like created these intelligent apes to dig their diamond mines in South Africa.
And we burst out of volcanoes? Are you, a Scientologist?
No.
Okay. I got to say, I will say the creationists have made me doubt evolution, but not for the reasons they're going for. Go ahead.
I was saying that the whole story about Eve coming from Adam's rib was my interpretation of that is that you couldn't get these little hominids to be fertile, so they used his own genetic material to create a female. So we're all hillbillies, apparently.
Again, it's like they don't want to believe we came from apes, but they do want to believe we came from dirt. It's got nothing to do with Christianity. Nothing whatsoever.
Right.
And believe me, a lot of these creationism touting politicians, they don't believe it either. They're just going rube trolling, and that's how it works. Dana is calling us from Maryland about ENDA, which passed the Senate. Thank goodness. Good morning, Dana. You're on the Stephanie Miller Show.
Hi, good morning, guys. How are you? Miss you. I haven't called in a while.
Welcome back.
So thank you. So speaking of not believing in science, morons, I want to give a shout out. My father-in-law lives in Manila, and to all the people in Manila, I want to give a shout out. You know, be safe. It's horrible. And like I said, my father-in-law lives there, and we can't reach him right now, but we're just hoping everything's okay.
Thank you. Thank you.
There's a huge super typhoon headed toward.
That's what I'm saying. You know, there's no climate
change. And it's very, very scary.
But, you know, come on. I mean.
Yeah, there's no climate change, but the oceans are a lot warmer, so we're getting hurricanes and super typhoons.
Yeah, and they're having, 195 mile an hour winds. I mean, give me a break.
We're getting snow in the fall because there's so much more moisture in the air.
Yes. I mean, things are changing, people. You wake up. So, and next, my personal belief is, you know, I don't think Chris Christie can ever be president. He's a bully. You know, he bullied that teacher, and she was standing there shaking, and, you know.
Yeah.
But there are
voters who like that. There are voters who like that kind
of
meanness.
People in Jersey don't vote, and I'd be interested. Maybe Jim knows what the actual turnout percentages were.
No, I don't.
Because we lived there 3 years, and none of our friends voted, and I thought it was disgusting. So that's a problem as well, and the midterms will be important. And as for ENDA, you know, why they're already coming out? No. We're not going to bring it to the floor for a vote.
Yeah.
But you know the Democrats are going to use that to their advantage, right? That's what this is all about.
Yes, of course I do. But I just don't understand how in 2013 this isn't a no-brainer.
It's a no-brainer. It is a no-brainer because there's a lot of politicians who know that being mean to dumb people passes for strength. Look at Chris Christie.
Right.
Look at John Boehner refusing to vote on ENDA. If you act mean, dumb people will think meanness and strength are the same thing.
No,
that's
and I agree.
These guys
but
get
I
elected.
Just, you know, I just think they just hate the president, and it's so cliche. You know, he's so black. And that, and it's just going to be no, no, no. I mean, what exactly is on your calendar?
Exactly
jobs
right.
or
You're
abortion?
Exactly right.
Or handing out free Krispy Kremes.
Yeah.
Oh, I thank you for the call, Dana. We'll be taking more calls from all y'all at 800-STEPH-12.
Gentlemen, it's the Stephanie Miller Show.
This is the Stephanie Miller Show. I'm John Fiebelsang, filling in for Steph all day, filling in live from New York, joined by Chris Lavoie and Jim Ward in the LA Bureau. Good morning, gentlemen.
Good morning, John.
And good morning to all of you. It's a pleasure for me to be back here in the studio. I've spent the last 2 months on the road working on a documentary feature for PBS about the American Dream. And every city we've gone to on this film, we've repeatedly run into the plight that American veterans are facing, from homelessness to, of course, the unprecedented rate of reports in military sexual assault. And anyone who cares about veterans in America and how these men and women are struggling coming home from Iraq and Afghanistan knows the effects of post-traumatic stress disorder. It's something that used to be called shell shock, it used to be called battle fatigue, and now it's an umbrella term. It's a mental condition that's triggered by memories of especially disturbing events, and there are many horrible symptoms. We all know that VA budgets are stretched very thin, and there's not always the resources our troops need, especially in an era when food stamps are being cut, when VA systems have a lack of trained professional help to help these guys and these women. And during a time when there's no jobs out there, and it only exacerbates the mental stress that these men and women are going through. So I'm very, very excited about this new event that's happening, and it's the Homeward Bound Telethon benefiting soldiers with PTSD. That would be exciting on its own, but the fact that Alan Alda is going to be appearing on it and hosting it makes it even more exciting, and we are very delighted to welcome Academy Award nominee, Emmy winner, hero of Broadway, Alan Alda, to the Stephanie Miller Show. Good morning, sir.
Hey, good morning, John. Thank you.
Thank you.
It's great that you're able to take some time and talk about this telethon, because I think we'll be able to raise some really much-needed money for returning veterans with post-traumatic stress disorder and traumatic brain injury, where the number of people who have been affected by this are really a gigantic number. I didn't realize how high it was. The Department of Veterans Affairs estimates that PTSD afflicts 11% of the veterans from the Afghanistan war, mm-hmm. and 20% of the Iraqi war veterans. That's a really big number.
It's a damning statistic.
It is. And you know what's worst about it to me, is what's frustrating to me as I read about it, is that for various reasons, the war didn't hit home. The wars have not hit home on us because there was no draft, and we were, unless your family was affected by it personally, it wasn't in the air. It wasn't part of the national conversation. So that had its own effect. But now it seems to be having an effect on the people coming back from the war, wounded emotionally and physically, and with their brains altered. We can't let that persist where it just goes into a rabbit hole and nobody thinks about it, because these people have to live with it every day. And it doesn't just affect them. It affects their families. It affects their spouses, their children. It could have an effect on the next generation because of the effect it has on their children.
Indeed.
So, we got to. So that's why we have this Homeward Bound telethon starting 7 p.m. Sunday night. It's going to be on the military channel, but you can also watch it because it's going to be streamed live on the internet at homewardboundtelethon.org, homewardboundtelethon.org. And Joe Mantegna will be a co-host, and Connie Francis will be a co-host, and she's done a lot of work.
Oh, wow.
So, you know, she started out entertaining the troops during the war a while back, several wars back, and then stuck with them so that she was helping them out on when they came back home. So she has a lot of experience in this and has a lot of experience in organizations helping veterans.
And, you know, I think it's very, very meaningful that you're hosting this event as well, Alan, because we were discussing earlier on the show, when you were talking about how Americans are so insulated from war, I think that's largely a byproduct of what happened after Vietnam, when politicians saw the TV news bringing the war into our living rooms. Families were repulsed and horrified. And for a whole generation, I think Americans grew up being insulated from the horrors of war. But the TV show MASH really balanced the scales. It's because of MASH that so many people who grew up in the 70s and 80s knew about the human cost of violence, about the horror, the stupidity of war, and the effect it has on people's psyches and their families. And I think that...
Well, I hope you may be giving us more credit than we deserve.
No,
but thank
I'm
you.
Telling
you,
there weren't other resources about it. We didn't have All Quiet on the Western Front and right. Growing up in school in the 70s and 80s, but we had MASH, and MASH really, really showed us the toll this took on these poor men. I'm wondering, how did you come to be involved with this event?
Well, I was just asked if I would take part in it, and I was really grateful because I get frustrated reading about it, and I don't know where to put that frustration to good use or how to do that. And so I realized that I can help awareness grow around these problems of PTSD and traumatic brain injury. Plus, I can help raise money, and I can give some money, and the people watching can do that. I had a really interesting experience yesterday. I was going into a local television station in New York City to promote the telethon, and the guy at the security desk already knew about it, and he said, "I'm going to be watching the telethon Sunday night." And he said, he told me he was had been a Marine for several years, 20 years ago, and he looked me right in the eye, and he said, "I know all about it. I'm going to give money I don't have." Now, if he can do that, then the rest of us who are a little more comfortable can do it.
I couldn't agree more.
And that look in his eye really made me understand how that deeply it goes when your buddies or you yourself have been injured in the brain. So this is the Homeward Bound Telethon, and it's going to be on the military channel. Mm-hmm. And you can also watch it on homewardboundtelethon.org. And there'll be, like any telethon, there will be celebrities and a lot of entertainment, a lot of singing groups. One singing group that I'm really looking forward to hearing is it's not a commercial group, but there'll be plenty of commercial pop stars on. But I want to hear the American Military Spouses Choir.
Mm-hmm.
That sounds like good. Isn't
that
great?
I have heard them on YouTube, and it's wonderful.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, great. I'm looking forward to that.
I know that this also means a lot to you, the effects of PTSD on the brain, because you're a big science guy. I actually saw you play Richard Fenneman show in L.A.
Yeah.
The Taper, which I always wish had made it to Broadway. And, I know
you're
very
passionate
about this.
Well, we did do it. We did it in the Broadway theater for 6 months, and it was great. We packed them in, and it was great to get
I was trapped in L.A. I didn't even know. Well, yeah, I mean, it's great. I love that you're an actor of TV and film who also does a lot of theater. I saw you do art when that ran in New York, too. And what I love about you doing this is that, like MASH, this event really cuts across all lines politically. If you care about the soldiers because you supported the wars, or if you care about the soldiers because you oppose the wars, this is an event that should speak to your heart and that you should
with. That's a really good way to put it. You can debate the validity of the wars or the usefulness of the wars. But I really love the way you put it, because it gives you passion to support the soldiers coming home. It gives you passion if you were in favor of it or if you were against it, because you can see that if you were against it, that this was something that hurt people, that and they should be cared for now.
Mm-hmm. Exactly right.
So I'm glad to hear you put it that way, and I hope, I hope people get to see the testimonies of decorated veterans who are, will be talking a little bit about what it's like for them personally and the effect it has on their families. I think that's going to be, it won't just be entertaining. It'll have a little emotional wallop every now and then.
I couldn't agree more. And it's, by the way, it's great. Every time you see someone who uses their celebrity for a cause, you know, celebrity might be the silliest thing we've invented as a human race.
Yeah,
so when you see someone actually using that capital to help others, I think there's no higher thing an artist can do with their fame.
Well, yeah, it's really a very small thing to do. The big thing to do is for all of us to coalesce around this and help these folks.
So I want everyone listening to write this down, okay? This is going to be November 10th, this weekend, from 3 to 7 p.m. East Time, and it's homewardboundtelethon.org. That's one word, homewardboundtelethon.org. Alan Alda, what a thrill. Do you have
Wait, hold on. Wait, I think you got the time wrong. In the East, it's 7 p.m. to 11 p.m.
Okay, thank you. I was misinformed by somebody over here.
Yeah.
Great. So
okay,
7
good.
P.m. to 10 p.m. on the East Coast, but it's homewardboundtelethon.org. Alan, thank you for calling into the show. I have to ask, do you have a favorite film role?
No, I don't. As soon as I do it, I let it go into the past, and then I think about what might be next. I don't think about the past, so I don't have a favorite.
Well, that's good to hear, but we're grateful for your past, because from The Glass House to The Aviator to Manhattan Murder Mystery and Crimes and Misdemeanors, I thank you for all the great film roles in addition to your wonderful
thank you.
TV work.
Thanks very much. Thanks so much for taking the time today.
Hey, have a great show on this weekend, and we'll be tuning in. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Bye-bye.
All right.
That was Alan Alda.
Yeah.
That was cool, him, man.
That was really cool.
That's awesome.
I loved Betsy's Wedding. He directed
that
movie.
That's one he wrote and directed, too. Yeah.
Yeah.
The Seduction of Joe Tynan he wrote, The Four Seasons, and of course, Sweet Liberty, A New Life. He had a real run of nice indie features that he wrote and directed in the 80s.
Yep, and The Four Seasons was Sandy Dennis's last starring role, actually, before she died. Yeah.
Wow, Carol Burnett too.
Yeah. Well,
so tomorrow we get Radar, right? No.
Gary Berghoff, I'm talking to you. Call us up right now. Boy, MASH is the one show that you'd want to see a reunion special that they could never do, because what would it have to take place in the 70s? I guess when I don't know, but most of the actors are still with us.
Did when they did the Trapper John M.D. show? Did they have any of the old MASH people come and visit him?
No, not even the guy who played Trapper John M.D. was on Trapper John M.D.
Right, I know that.
Right. Pernell Roberts got that gig. My God.
Yeah.
But no, I don't. But on After MASH.
Oh, let's not talk about that.
On After MASH, Gary Berghoff did make an appearance on one episode as Radar.
Yeah. Oh.
I ran into Sally Kellerman a couple years ago, and she looks amazing.
Yeah, did an episode of Providence with her, and she's dynamite. Of course, she got the Oscar nomination for the movie.
Right.
I got to meet her. I got to meet Loretta Swit one night at the Duplex in New York as well.
Oh, cool. Wow.
Yeah, and then Mike Farrell. I love that they're all out there. I met Jamie Farr once at an audition. Like, a lot of those guys are still out there working, and it's great to see.
Absolutely.
So we got some time. You know what? I haven't heard a promo for a sexy liberal show, Chris.
And we got a promo for a show that's coming up in February in Phoenix.
Stephanie Miller is an American political commentator, comedian, and host of The Stephanie Miller Show.
Haven't I read that somewhere before?
May I continue? Miller's Sexy Liberal Comedy Tour brings together three liberal comedians for an evening of liberal humor and comment.
That's it. You're lifting the script straight from Wikipedia. Here, let me do this. On Saturday, February 15th, the original Stephanie Miller Sexy Liberal Comedy Tour is coming to Phoenix, Arizona, and will perform live at the Orpheum Theater.
The Orpheum Theater is a 1,364-seat theater.
Seriously, knock it off. Tickets are available by going to Ticketmaster.com. Don't miss your chance to see the authentic, one-of-a-kind, never-copied Stephanie Miller Sexy Liberal Comedy Tour. February 15th, live at the Orpheum Theater. Get your tickets now. Go to Ticketmaster.com.
All right.
Man, I can't wait to go back to Phoenix, and I can't wait to take your calls coming up at 800-STEPH-1-2, because we got to go to a break and make some money from Mama. This is the Stephanie Miller Show. I'm John Fugelsang with you all morning. Give us a jingle, won't you? We'll be right back.
I got her number off the men's room stall. 1-800-STEPH-1-2.
Stephanie Miller.
Wow, minor disco.
Minor disco? Yikes. That's an oxymoron. There's no such thing.
Oh, come on.
She didn't sound like a minor.
This is the Stephanie Miller Show. I'm John Fugelsang, filling in for Steffers all morning long. We're taking your calls at 800-STEFF-1-2. And I'm joined, as always, by Chris and Jim Los Mooks in the West Coast Bureau. Good morning, guys.
Buenos nachos. That means, means good nachos.
So far, we have the teenager standing up to Bobby Jindal about science.
Yep.
And so far, we have the we have Alan Alda, who you might have heard of.
Yeah, just a little bit.
Yes. So now we're going back to your calls, and I'd love to go to Lynn, who's calling from Louisiana, the state itself embroiled in the creationism drama. Lynn, good morning. You're on the Steff Miller Show.
Hi. How are you?
I'm better now. How are you?
I'm great. I left California a year ago, and I'm living in Covington, Louisiana, with my family, trying to navigate the schools and figure it out.
It's a beautiful part of the country, and you're got a lot of charters down there now.
A lot of charters. I'm not in Orleans Parish. I'm up in St. Tammany Parish, only 35 miles away, so things operate a little differently. We haven't been besieged with the voucher system, which is another problem that Bobby Jindal has caused here. Last night I went to an academic open house for a potential high school for my child, and what I'm finding here is if you want to get away from creationism, you need to go to a Catholic school.
Wow. It's very, very true because the Vatican, to their credit, has never taken issue with the theory of evolution, and even in Bill Maher's movie, the Vatican astronomer mentions that.
Yes, and last night I saw the priest came out and he gave his big story on everything he's doing, and you know, he wants these kids in these Catholic academies going to Harvard like Bobby Jindal did. And he wants them, you know, going to schools outside of Louisiana and competing. Just today in my newspaper, Louisiana scored practically at the bottom of the nation in test scores. And, of course, what else they're fighting here is core standards. They don't want it. So you have Bobby Jindal signed up for core standards with the governors around the country. He wants it.
Yeah.
But they're fighting it here. So not only do they want to kind of stay stupid, in my opinion, and 300 parents show up to a middle school in my town wanting to stop core standards, the Catholic schools are saying, we're not playing ball. The best students around here go to Catholic academies where they let Jewish kids in, non-denominational, you know, they're not. They're not playing the game, and so it's a really strange thing. I'm like I said, I'm from California. Public schools is all I know, and I come here, and I'm just watching the public schools just be used as, I don't know, experiments? Because Bobby Jindal wants in the White House?
Well, the public schools are actually, they're being transitioned to being holding pens where the poor kids go.
Yeah.
And that's all they're going to be because they'll have enough voucher systems to be able to send kids to charter schools. And I got to say, I spent a lot of time in Louisiana charter schools in the last 2 weeks. There's a lot of great teachers, a lot of great students. Some people are doing very well. But the fact is, it hasn't saved the state money. They're actually spending more per student now, especially when you factor in transportation costs.
That, and they're closing. They've lost their funding because some of the charter
schools can't.
They've closed
11 charter schools since 2006. Yep.
This is a city still reeling from losing 9 high schools in Katrina. The high school I visited last night in St. Tammany Parish was destroyed in St. Bernard, and they moved it up here in 2008.
Wow.
So, I mean, there is just this jockeying all around, and what you have is, you said it earlier this morning, a governor who wants in the White House so bad, pick your topic, vaginal ultrasounds, he's on that. He's not participating in the health care exchanges.
And
people in this state, they're very agnostic. I don't find them, they don't read newspapers. They don't do much. You only get a newspaper 3 days a week here, and I live 35 miles from a major city. I mean, they're not informed.
No, they're not. They're not.
And, stupid, Louisiana.
Well, yeah, and again, this is not, you know, it's not Jews doing this. It's not Catholics doing this. They're not hung up on believing in the talking snake. And it's stupidity as a virtue. Mm-hmm. Again, creationism has nothing to do with Christianity and the teachings of Jesus. Yep. It's just about controlling people. And if you believe in creationism, then you believe you can blame women for something talking snakes do. And who doesn't love that?
Exactly.
Taking more of your calls when we come back. Tina Dupuy joining us at the top of the hour. It's the Stephanie Miller Show. I'm John Thiebelsang. Stick around.
Stephanie Miller.
That's who I am now. Penny throwing dummy.
This is the Stephanie Miller Show. I'm John Thiebelsang, filling in for Steph all morning from the New York Bureau, joined by Chris and Jim in the West Coast Bureau. Hello, gents. How's it going over there?
Hiya. It's going well.
You know what Rolling Stone says about Thor?
What does he say about Thor?
What does Rolling Stone say about Thor?
They say Thor sucks.
He sucks eggs?
They say Thor sucks. They say Thor 2 sucks.
Actually, T-Bone saw it earlier this week at a special preview screening, and he said it was delightful.
Yeah, I don't care. I want to see it anyway. If I went by what Rolling Stone, what Peter Travers says about films, I would have quit cinema years ago. So
yeah.
No worries there. Hey, we're taking your calls all morning at 1-800-STEPH-1-2. And I don't know if you folks have heard, but the Tea Party has had it with lying. They are disgusted at a public figure lying to America, and they think it's wrong and impeachable and a grave sin, and that's why the Tea Party is renouncing Rand Paul and George Bush and Dick Cheney and Paul Wolfowitz and 60 Minutes Benghazi story.
Yes.
I'm just kidding.
Right.
They're just going after the president for making a promise that the insurance company's broke, and that means it's Obama's fault. So whenever I need to make sense out of the healthcare situation, I have to go to the Oracle. To the Ayatollah.
Hello world, here's the news that's bringing. Come on, get Jackie.
Had to play her jingle. Now that she's good. Here, is Jackie Schechner.
Good morning, Jackie.
Good morning.
Hey. Welcome to the show.
I have to say, Rolling Stone lost me on movie reviews when it liked Elysium.
Oh, really?
Oh, yeah.
Oh. Yeah. Yeah, that could not have been worse, and it got a good review from Rolling Stone. That's where they lost me.
Peter Travers is a very nice guy, but he likes bad movies the way a drunk girl in the bar at 3 a.m. likes bad guys. It's really sad. He'll go home with any movie he will. But
he thinks they love him. He doesn't like. Yeah.
No, he can change it. Jackie, it's great to have you call in because, of course, we're all very, very angry at President Obama, and we're glad he apologized for the insurance companies forcing people to give up crappy plans.
Yeah, isn't that amazing? Like, why are people so hesitant to blame the insurance companies when it's the insurance company's fault? And it's
That's
not a coincidence.
That's all
oh, yeah,
of it. That's the
not...
Fox News playbook. Don't blame Obama if your insurance company rates go up. I mean, don't blame the insurance companies for what they do. Blame Obama.
Thanks, Obama.
Yeah, and it's so obviously a coordinated PR effort. I mean, all of these insurance companies had 3.5 years to change their plans so that they complied with the Affordable Care Act. Mm-hmm. And the day or so that the exchange is open, they all send out letters saying we're canceling your plans and doubling your rates. I mean, it's so obvious, and I feel like the American public should be outraged that the insurance companies are trying to fool them in a way that they shouldn't be so vulnerable to, and yet they're turning around and blaming the president, the Affordable Care Act.
That's
so
interesting.
Stady.
Jackie, do you think that, like, America just has Stockholm Syndrome when it comes to insurance companies? We've all grown up with this system of middlemen getting rich off of disease, mm-hmm. of people who have nothing to do with actually healing you, just being the gatekeeper and taking your money so you can see a doctor. And, you know, when Chris Christie says we're not going to put a bureaucrat between you and your doctor, well, we've had a private business between us and our doctors for decades. Are we just so numb to the reality of it?
I think people are afraid of the alternative because they don't know what it is. So they're willing to hang on to what they're used to, even though what they're used to is awful. So, yeah, I mean, I do believe there's a bit of Stockholm syndrome there. And I also, you know, I went into a doctor's office the other day, and I was standing in the waiting room, and there was a woman behind the desk, and I heard her say, "What is so confusing about this to you? I've been on the phone with you for a half an hour. You've now transferred me to 5 different people. I'm just trying to get pre-authorization for a medication for a patient." Now, this is a woman who normally is dealing with patients. It's a woman, I mean, it's an administrator in the office. And instead of doing what she should be doing, which is helping take care of patients, she's on the phone arguing with an insurance company over a pre-approval of a medication that the doctor says the patient needs. If that's not the epitome of bureaucracy, then I don't know what is.
So what's the outrage about? I know that every week we'll have a new outrage of the week to blame the president for, and then it'll slowly be debunked as the week goes on. But let me ask you specifically, in your opinion, did the president lie when he said you'll be able to keep your plan?
Lying is a strong word on this one, and the explanation behind it is that people were so afraid of what change was coming. And the irony is that everything got so watered down that actually all you're doing is creating an exchange for a bunch of private health insurance plans. I mean, we really didn't do anything dramatic.
It wasn't healthcare reform, it was healthcare improvement.
Yeah, it was health insurance. Yeah, I mean, really, it was that's
health
a really
insurance
good way to put it.
Yeah.
But
insurance reform.
Should they have sold it just a little bit differently, like turning a negative into a positive, saying, you know, if you have a bad plan, you're going to get a better plan?
Maybe, but you know what? The rhetoric was so confused from the beginning, and I'm not going to give the administration credit for doing a good PR job on this one.
No, I always felt they should have called it health insurance reform from the very beginning and not health care reform, because people generally like their health care, they like their doctor, and they get scared of that, but no one likes their insurance company.
Right, but the problem was that the administration kind of cut a deal with the insurance industry and said, we're going to pretend like you're good actors. And so it was very hard when we were fighting from the outside to try to attack the insurance companies. I mean, message from the very beginning was you can't trust the insurance companies to fix the healthcare mess.
But I think
and
you're
the administration,
right.
I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, please go ahead. The administration, please finish that thought.
Oh, the administration just said kind of behind the scenes, let's not go after the insurance companies so hard because we're trying to work with them. And then when months down the road, they realized that the insurance companies are exactly who we thought they were. They said, okay, now we can tamp up the rhetoric, but you can't, or we can turn up the rhetoric, but you can't do that late in the game. So they miscalculated based on the same strategy it seems that the president has with Republicans, which is try and make them your friend, and they don't want to be your friend.
Exactly.
And it's the same thing he did with the insurance company.
Yeah, it reminds me of giving my money to the bully, but giving my lunch money to the school bully because I thought it would make him like me more. And I think that in that sense, the president has sort of tried to walk the line of telling us the straight dope about how these insurance companies have been hosing us for decades while still not completely burning a bridge between his administration and the very powerful insurance companies. Because, you know, again, a lot of progressives are frustrated the president's not coming out and saying these insurance companies can go to hell, but it's not really realistic. And, Jackie, I'd like you to comment on something. Chris, can we play the first cut? Mm-hmm. This is the president from his interview where he was apologizing, you know, for stuff that is the fault of insurance companies. And I don't know if he's covering for them or not, but let's listen to cut one.
I meant what I said, and we worked hard to try to make sure that we implemented it properly. But obviously we didn't do a good enough job, and I regret that.
I mean, fair enough to say, you know, people forget the amount of glitches that Medicare Part D had when that site first launched.
Yeah, I mean, look, it's a website that isn't working the way it should, and there really is very little excuse for that in this day and age and the technology that's available to us if you're going to create an online marketplace, and that's going to be really the big signature component of your law that's being implemented, you know, the last final step before we get to full implementation. You've got to make sure that puppy works. And, you know, they really can't excuse away that one. But I will say that the law was written so that every state runs its own exchange, and a lot of the states procrastinated with the hope the law would be repealed or overturned, the Republican ones especially, and that put a very heavy burden on the federal government. And it's funny to me that the states that are arguing, especially the GOP-led states that are arguing all the time for states' rights, really just passed the buck on this one and said, fine, federal government take it over. And the federal government now has a much heavier lift than it anticipated. Now, of course, it should have been prepared because this is a big deal, but, or as Joe Biden would say, a big effing deal. But what they needed to do was, you know, at some point the states were supposed to do their own exchanges, and they just said, no, we're not going to do it. So now the federal government's responsible for 35 states instead of maybe one or two.
I'm a bit shocked that there hasn't been more of a backlash amongst these southern states that have rejected the Medicare funds, and that sick people and poor people and seniors and folks who need that help haven't made more noise in the media. Are you?
Oh, the Medicaid funds? Yeah, well, the problem is that it's very hard to organize the uninsured and the poor. It's a very hard constituency to organize. So you've got a lot of people who are suffering because the state didn't take federal money to expand Medicaid. I mean, that's the travesty, is that the federal government was going to cover the cost of Medicaid entirely for the first 3 years and then at 90% for the years after that. So it wasn't going to cost the state anything to expand Medicaid.
Exactly. And then only 10% max after 3 years.
Yeah, and the states chose not to do it, and now you've got a lot of uninsured people and a lot of poor people who are really suffering, but it's very hard. It's very hard to organize those constituencies, not the least of which is because they're just trying to survive day to day. And they don't have the energy or the motivation to be activists because, frankly, they've just got to figure out how to feed themselves and their families.
Yeah, yeah. So Jackie, for folks listening to this who have to deal with the right-wing coworker or neighbor or relative who just wants to recite the Tea Party talking points, you know, those charming folks out there defending the insurance companies and not realizing it, those people who call Obamacare socialism because they don't know what words mean. What do you say to them? I mean, was it wrong for the president to apologize, and how can they push back against this week's false talking point from the Tea Party?
Yeah, I mean, that's the unfortunate thing, is that people are saying, you know, these plans were canceled and people are having to pay more. People just need to do their homework, and they need to read some facts from some factual outlets. And what's happened is, it's very simple, is that the insurance companies have to get rid of the plans that don't comply with the basic minimums of the Affordable Care Act, something they should have done over the last 3 years. They chose to wait till the very last minute and make a big PR deal out of it to try to make it look worse than it really is. You don't have to stay with your insurance company. I mean, that's the benefit of these exchanges, is that if your insurance company is canceling the policy that you have because it's a crappy policy, go out and look at the exchange and see what else is available. Or take
so that's not the president lying? That's not the president lying, correct? If he said you can keep your crappy plan and then the insurance company drops your crappy plan?
Yeah, the president didn't lie about that. What he was trying to do at the time, and look, I don't like politicians who lie any more than anybody else does, and I think lie is a strong word on this one, because what he was trying to do was make people comfortable with reform. And the truth is that 85% of the population gets its insurance through work or through a government program like Medicare or Medicaid, and nothing's changing within those parameters.
Sure, but go ahead, Jackson.
Go ahead, I'm sorry.
Oh, I have no problem with
talking about the parameters.
Yeah, and I have no problem with the president lying to save American lives, okay? I have no problem with the president lying through his teeth to save lives and do good. We just came off 8 years of presidents lying that took American lives and killed 5,000 soldiers, and these people have no problem with that whatsoever. So I don't really see the outrage, Jackie. If I promise to come to your dance recital and I book the flight and make sure I have enough time and I can make that promise, and then the airline decides to cancel the flight to save money and I don't make it, does that make me a liar, or does someone else keep me from fulfilling my promise?
It's exactly the way, yes, it's exactly what it is. I mean, I don't understand why this need to defend the insurance companies. The president, you know, signed a law that's going to make health insurance coverage more substantial for people, and people are angry about that. It's a really stupid thing. I mean, one of the things I learned during the fight is that a lot of times the insurance companies will sell you these plans that are total shams, and once you need coverage, there's nothing there for you. And they say, well, it was there in the fine print. How come you didn't see it? So the law wipes out a lot of those plans, and people are angry about that. I mean,
exactly,
that's
right.
Stupid.
Because their hatred for Obama is more powerful than their common sense about how they're all screwed by insurance companies. Jackie Schechner, my God, you're brilliant, gorgeous, dynamic, and fabulous. How can people follow you?
On Twitter, it's Jackie with an I, J-A-C-K-I, and then Schechner. And you can find it through, I don't know, through you, or Google it. It'll correct your spelling if you Google it.
Thank you.
Yes.
I am so grateful to you for coming on when I'm guest hosting. It's always a pleasure, and I hope to see you again very soon.
Yes, my pleasure. Absolutely. Anytime.
Thanks, Jackie.
Have a great weekend. Thank you.
All right.
We'll be back in a few minutes taking your calls. I know folks have been waiting on hold. Let's get to all y'all. 1-800-STEF-12.
Well, at least it's a good place to see celebrities.
It's the Stephanie Miller Show.
Stephanie Miller. Right. You're bloody well right. You got a bloody right to say. Right. You're bloody well right. You know you got a right to say.
It's the Stephanie Miller Show. And thank you for playing some Lou Reed Velvet Underground for me, Chris.
Hey. Yeah, I don't think we have any.
Oh, you got to get some before we're done today. I need to hear me some Lou Reed on this show before
we're
done.
Even I Love You, Suzanne.
I love you, Suzanne. Do what you want to do.
Hey,
sure,
I love that song.
Yes, I would take that.
Would you really?
How about
we were listening to some 70s era Lou Reed disco last night, and man, that was some dirty disco he did.
Ooh. Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Man, great stuff. And this is
I don't
John
think Lou Reed
Fiegelsang.
Could do any other kind of disco.
No, he did not. But you know, it's just it's so sad because I just love Lou Reed so much. Velvet Underground is, in my opinion, the greatest rock and roll band America has ever produced, and I will say that in front of anyone. I think they're the best rock band America has ever given us. And you know, he was a real hero to me as a New Yorker. He used to live across the street from me on Christopher, and I would see him and Laurie Anderson all the time.
Oh.
Like I introduced my girlfriend to Lou Reed in Washington Square Park one night in like '92. I mean, he was just always around, and you'd see him, like, checking out doo-wop groups on Bleecker Street, poking his face in the duplex at who was singing show tunes. Like, he was just, I rode the elevator with him all the time, and we talk about, you know, New York pizza versus Chicago pizza. He was such a real guy, and I as a New Yorker, I got to see Lou Reed at the Supper Club, at Carnegie Hall, at Beacon Theater, Madison Square Garden, and Giant Stadium. Like, all the big New York venues I got to see him play live in.
And the New York album was one of the first CDs I bought, actually.
Well, it's one of the first CDs worth buying of that era, and I think it's his best record of all of his solo albums. I would put New York above anything. It's just such a great record.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, it's just...
busload of faith to get by.
Yeah. Oh, it's such a loss. And, you know, I'm glad there's so much music. I wish that Metallica record wasn't the last thing he put out, but I hope that there's going to be, you know, don't buy the Lou Reed Metallica album if you're looking to introduce yourself to the canon. Get the Velvet's greatest hits or something.
Oh,
get New York City Man, his two disc hits collection. But anyway, so we're taking some calls, right? We've had guests all morning. I'm trying to talk to some of the staff that's calling in. Carrie is calling us from Chicago. Carrie, good morning. You are on the Stephanie Miller Show.
Hey there. Well, I was going to talk about creation. I wanted to talk, now that you talked about healthcare, but I'd rather talk about that. But anyone who wants to know what UCL scientists say about evolution, they go to evolutionversusgod.com and watch a little video there. But anyway.
Is evolution in opposition to God?
Is it opposition to God?
Is it in opposition to God?
Is evolution the opposite of God?
No, it's a video about evolution versus God.
No. Not talking about the video.
Yeah, I'm asking you. I'm saying is believing in evolution somehow opposed to believing in God?
Well, it'd be against the Bible.
Right, but, you know, that's only if you
evolution. There's no scientific evidence and no proof whatsoever of any cross-species evolution. That a dog ever with a cat, that a fish was ever an elephant.
No one's talking about that.
That's not what the theory of evolution is.
That's not what evolution is. How do you define the theory of evolution?
That, well, the theory of regular evolution is true through the Bible, that if you have a horse that changes size, or it's still a horse, if you have a dog, it changes to a type of dog, or it becomes a wolf, or whatever.
Breeding, right? Which we see done in livestock breeding and dog breeding to this day. There are variations, there are mutations.
No dog becomes an elephant.
But that's not the theory of evolution. Darwin never said that a dog became a cat.
Yeah.
Didn't a monkey
How could you argue against evolution?
No, hang on, let the man talk. Go ahead, sir. Didn't Darwin say what? No, sir. Darwin, no, evolution does not say that. Evolution does not say man came from monkeys. Evolution says that man and other primates share a common ancestor. It doesn't say we came from monkeys.
They don't.
Well, but
based on what?
So let me ask you, sir, do you believe...
They don't share a common ancestor. All animals appeared at the same time if you look at the evolution. If you look in colleges, if you look what they teach in college,
Yes, I've heard of college.
Horses, I've been to college.
Yeah. Horses, dogs, elephants, they've all been elephants ever since they were elephants. Ever since there never were anything
so
else.
So that's got nothing to do with the scientific method. Let me ask about the book of Genesis. Do you take all of Genesis as literal fact?
Yes.
Okay.
Is that a yes, sir?
Yes, he said yes.
Okay,
yes,
do you believe that women have painful menstruation and childbirth because of Eve's transgression with the serpent?
Yes.
Hmm.
Do you believe that that men were meant to work? Okay, God has put man to work.
I'm asking you taking Genesis as literal fact. So let me ask you this.
Which
creationism account do you believe in? Do you believe, as Genesis 1 states, that man and woman appeared simultaneously? Or do you believe Genesis chapter 2, which says that man was here first and then his rib was turned into woman?
No, it did not say. It does not say what you're saying.
What are you talking about?
Okay, if you want to just take regular theory of evolution, Darwin evolution.
No, I'm asking about Genesis. Do you believe, which creation account of Genesis do you accept? That man and woman appeared simultaneously, or that man was first
not
and woman
says.
Came from his rib?
Absolutely.
That's what
not.
Genesis
does
1 does say,
that.
Mister. Of course it does.
Genesis 1 says exactly the same thing as what you said, that about Eve and the apple and so on.
Would you want to hang around for the break?
Sure.
All right.
Okay, thanks. We'll be right back. Stephanie Miller's show. It's going to be fun.
Gentlemen, it's the Stephanie Miller Show.
This is the Stephanie Miller Show. I'm John Fugelsang, filling in for Steph all morning. We're talking about Arafat. We're talking about trans fat. We're talking about Chris Christie, and I'm joined in the L.A. Bureau by Jim Ward and Chris Lavoie, the mooks of the West. Good morning, gentlemen.
Buenos dias.
We've had quite a packed show so far. We've had Zach Coplin, the teenage science student who stood up against Bobby Jindal's creationism law. We've had Alan Alda. You might have heard of him before. And Jackie Schechner. And now I got to say I'm really pleased because for the full hour, joining me here in the New York Bureau, the one, the only, the Stephanie Miller Show regular, the luminous Tina Dupuy.
We love Hello. Tina.
Hello, boy.
Hello.
Hello.
Welcome. I get to see her in person.
Yeah.
Lucky bastard.
Oh, man, those smart blondes intimidate me. And I have to give my apologies to our creationism caller. We were not able to continue the call. He's invited to call back any time I'm hosting because I really enjoy talking with people who think that believing in a talking snake makes you a better person. And people who think believing in a talking snake has anything to do with following the teachings of Jesus, because it doesn't. Tina, you're a big fan of creationism, aren't you?
I am. Well, here's the thing. Creationism or evolution didn't exist when the Bible was written. So Christians have actually evolved.
Well, I'm sorry. Evolution existed. The theory
it
of evolution
existed,
didn't
but the
exist.
Theory of Darwin didn't exist when.
Right.
So the church has actually had to evolve to be against Darwinism, which I find to be a beautiful irony.
Well, church has evolved in many ways. Religion has evolved
exactly.
in many ways. But again, believing in, you know, it used to be pro-slavery. But believing in a talking snake doesn't make you a better person. It makes you a more obedient follower of a club, of an unauthorized Jesus fan club. And Jesus didn't weigh in on the talking snake.
No, he didn't. And also, you know, and really, what is the point? You know, it's like, if I can deny science, then that means what? Then I get to deny science, then I get to deny global warming, then I get to deny that in equal rights. Like, there's all sorts of things that, like, if my conscience trumps any kind of evidence, you know, there's a world of possibilities.
And it's not critical thought. By going along with, you know, global warming doesn't exist because of Genesis, then you are just making pollution more available. You are making it easier for companies to pollute your air and water supplies. By saying that the Onan story means that you can't use birth control means you haven't read the story because it's got nothing to do with birth control. It's got to do with not following God's direct orders. And again, you know, you're saying that you think women deserve painful childbirth and monthly menstruation because they got hoodwinked by a snake. And, right. And you know, furthermore, read on in Genesis and read about the fallen angels who mated with human females and gave birth to giants. That's what you believe in. And you know that guy who was calling does not believe in the book of Leviticus because you know he doesn't stone gay men or gluttonous children to death when he sees them on the streets.
Precisely, because we're cherry picking. We're whitewashing and we're cherry picking.
Which everyone does. Everyone
You're
of every
right.
faith,
Absolutely.
Every religious person of every faith picks and chooses the parts of their holy books they choose to follow. That ain't nothing new. But when you do it to justify meanness or dumbness, we got to stand up because some of us like to cherry pick our religious books for the sake of being nice to people, for social justice, for kindness, compassion, and love, those filthy liberal concepts. So welcome, Ms. Dupuis.
Thank you.
We're going to be taking your calls all morning at 800-STEF-12. We do have a lot of people on the phone, but at first I do want to ask you about your new piece in The Atlantic. Because I read this piece. Everyone, y'all got to go on The Atlantic and read Tina's piece about Randy Paul.
Oh,
because,
boy.
You know, we've been talking all about Rand Paul, and I enjoy, Rand Paul. He's very, very angry about these accusations of plagiarism. He's going to fight back. One of his staff has already written a speech about his family dog Checkers. You've got to see. And we've already gone through the meta irony that Rand Paul said something he didn't write was his, but Ron Paul said something he did write wasn't his. But you, Tina Dupuis, have a perspective on this that hadn't occurred to me because I have a Y chromosome. Tell me.
My question or my piece asked the question: what if Rand Paul were a woman?
Mm-hmm.
And what if he were a beautiful woman and he said all the ridiculously dumb stuff that he says? But before the plagiarism, if he said, you know, one of the quotes is said that when the Republicans were just tanking in the polls, that he said that he wanted to bring up Charlie Sheen winning. And that's what I feel like, winning, but I'm not on drugs. Now, if he had, like, an amazing rack and was a gorgeous woman, and he said these things, he would be giggled out of Washington.
Especially if he wore that toupee.
But, like, the way we treat females who say dumb things like he says is much more dismissive, much more harsh, and we give him a pass for getting things factually wrong. He can't seem to get the debt and the deficit. He mixes those up all the time. He gets he called for a Fed chairman who had been dead for 5 years after being asked specifically for a non-dead Fed chairman. He does these things all the time. And if it were a woman, who any of us, you know, anybody was attracted to, God forbid, it would be, you know, a source of just ridicule.
Well,
we have given, and because he's a guy and I guess a doctor, technically, we've just kind of, and he's of a philosophy that we associate with college-bound 17-year-olds. Oh, yeah. I went there. We kind of give him a real pass on this.
Here from Tina's piece, but Randy, that's the name of our fictitious women senator, has a problem with the facts.
With an eye.
They seem to elude her. She repeatedly says we have a $1 trillion deficit when, according to the CBO, it's only $642 billion and falling sharply, plus she mixes up deficit and debt. Randy tries to position herself as above this fray. Quote, the fact-checking is not fact-checking. These are people with a bias. It's purely an opinion. The stuff is so ludicrous, I don't even read it, she says of her critics. And it's true. You know, I asked Rand Paul how he felt about people accusing him of ripping off other people's lines, and he just said hate is going to hate. So I think he's really got a problem with this. But you're exactly right. Imagine the sexism if a female senator came out and was this dumb. Well, I don't have to imagine it. We've seen it in Congress, haven't we?
Absolutely. Over and over again.
Lord.
We've seen it as a VP candidate.
The day
and
is
people
had.
And people really thought that they were having, like, these really very serious think pieces asking if Sarah Palin is smart enough to be president. And it's like no one has sat down and had a think piece about whether Rand Paul has the intelligence to be president.
Well, isn't a part of that because the media really wants to see Rand Paul run for president because he's going to make it very interesting?
Well, I don't think that the media is a monolith and we could actually make those kind of determinations. But I do think that it's, like, abject laziness and kind of intimidation about Rand Paul. It just, I think that most of the things you can subscribe to the media or ascribe to the media as conspiracy, it's actually laziness.
I completely agree.
It just doesn't, it's not as tantalizing to see a dumb guy say dumb things as opposed to a dumb woman. It's more like Real Housewives level of like interests.
I completely agree. Now, let's be fair.
No,
let's be fair. We like Rand Paul on the drug war. He's one of the bravest men in the Senate on the drug war, correct?
Yes. No, I agree with that. Absolutely.
Although there
does
are...
not mean he's the smartest man.
Well, no. I mean,
but
and
he's right on that issue.
And we heard he told a bunch of evangelicals it's not substantiated that he doesn't have any intention of legalizing marijuana.
Right.
He just hates the drug war.
Yeah, exactly.
So
I don't like it, but I'm not going to change it.
You know what? We even though he was cravenly trying to smear Obama, we applaud Rand Paul for his comments on drones. I don't think that the drone campaign helps President Obama in the short term or the long term. It doesn't make America safer.
No, but that's a very nuanced issue that he kind of went on a very strange side of it. I mean, if his umbrage with drones is that we're killing people anonymous or that we're killing people, we've had that capability. We've had that capability for a long time. If it's just the technology, then, you know, take umbrage with that. But if it is a civil rights issue, then take issue with that. But like a month after, and I say this in my piece, a month after his filibuster, he went and said that he didn't care if someone who was trying to rob him
mm-hmm.
was killed by a rifle.
Someone
or
robbing
a
liquor store.
Like he was making a joke about it a month later, like a little quip, flippant comment. And it's like, okay, well, what is your deal?
Yeah, he said he would have no problem with a drone strike killing someone who had just robbed a liquor store.
Yes.
So in other words, due process doesn't matter.
No.
A fair trial doesn't
not.
Matter.
Right. And so it's like I still am not clear about if after 13 hours, and I have to admit I watched more than I should have. You know, I mean, really, I don't understand what his issue was. It was with it, except for to take a stand and get himself in the headlines.
Well, I think Rand has been in the bubble for a long time, and I think he's very used to being around people who think he's just brilliant. And he doesn't
that
get any
really bizarre
he
to
gets,
me because those are the people flaming at me on Twitter, and it
yeah.
is really weird.
Well, and they're full of hostility, and generally speaking, you know, I don't like to see liberals be as ugly and mean with the name calling as conservatives are, but generally speaking, these conservative guys prove this right-wing thug mentality every time they sit down at Twitter. But, you know, in the case of Rand Paul, he hasn't really faced a lot of tough questioning. And the one time he did was when he went on Rachel Maddow's show as soon as he was elected, which I really respected him for doing. And he pretty much stepped in it by repeating a point shared by many libertarian folks that he thought there were elements of the civil rights bill that were not fair. And that if businesses wanted to discriminate against black patrons in a free society based on liberty, they should be given the liberty to deny liberty to someone else.
Right.
He's now whitewashed that, went to Howard University and spoke and said he's always supported the Civil Rights Act. And that's a lie.
And right. And this was the core of my piece. He crumbles on any follow-up questions. He is not able.
Fortunately, we have a media allergic to follow-up questions.
Exactly. But he is not able to have any follow-up questions and answer them in an intelligent way. He's able to, like, spew out what he's heard other people say. Clearly, we have proof. But he is not able to actually take follow-up questions. And if he were a woman and if he were an attractive woman in a position of power in the Congress, he would be toast.
Well, then let me ask you guys, because I'm going to be appearing on the Ed Schultz show later today, and of course they've asked me to talk about. It's my first day back in New York, so of course I'm doing this show for 3 hours. I'm having a meeting. I'm getting my hair cut. I'm doing stand up tonight and the Ed Schultz show. This is my day off. But they want to talk about Sarah Palin, and you know I'm like, who? Oh, that lady. Yeah. And Sarah Palin, of course, is visiting Iowa.
Yay!
Oh, that's Bachman. Same
difference. He's not going away. And let me ask you, Tina, and I'd like to ask Chris and Jim this as well. Mm-hmm. Has the treatment of Sarah Palin by the media crossed over into sexism?
Well, I think it's always sexist, but I think the reason why Sarah Palin is in Iowa, she has a book coming out.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, she's not going away, but she's kind of like she's been able to monetize being a, you know, an also-ran and you know, I mean, that's why she's in Iowa. It's so
that's a feat in and of itself. I mean, good for her if she's able to monetize that, I suppose.
What, that she had someone else ghostwrite a book for her?
Well,
yeah, I think it's a great American dream. I think it's wonderful of her. And, you know, although every time I see Sarah Palin's old books at Barnes & Noble, I'm like, excuse me, that's a bit more than 50% off.
I think that she has benefited from reverse sexism where people, you know, felt bad for actually asking her hard questions because mm-hmm. she clearly would crumble. I think she won her one debate with Biden because of reverse sexism, because all she had to do was not vomit, and she won.
Yes, yeah. She passed the drool test.
Exactly.
That was the George W. Bush masterpiece.
You
was,
got it.
Oh, he didn't drool. He's just a guy of below average intelligence. I like him.
She's benefited from both.
Can we merge them into Rand Palin, just for you? We can avoid the sexism charges.
Well, you know, and I think that actually people talking about, you know, Sarah Palin's gender really takes away from talking about Sarah Palin as a fascist. And I think that that shows how sexist we as a society are.
That's exactly what reverse sexism is. Like, if we had a candidate whose spouse was a secessionist,
mm-hmm.
That would be a big issue, but because it's Sarah Palin.
Exactly.
And it's so far down on the list of all the other stuff.
Yeah, and she just wanted to repeat Bush policies, so she was a recessionist married to a secessionist. And again, you're exactly right. I mean, if it had been, fortunately, Sarah Palin will never be running for high office again. She should have run last year, in my opinion. Even if she just wants to perpetuate her celebrity, she should have run last year. She really missed a chance to sell more units. But she ain't going away. I predict she will be the first ever major party ticket candidate to host a cosmetics infomercial in our lifetime. We'll be coming back with Tina and taking your calls at 1-800-STEF-12.
Ooh, what a lovely program.
It's the Stephanie Miller Show.
Stephanie Miller.
This is the Stephanie Miller Show. I am John Fugelsang, joining you from Times Square, New York City.
New York City!
Oh, I'm in the Boo Radley suite right over here, let me tell you. This is this room here, this studio, the Anne Frank family was brought into this room and was like, do you have something bigger, Mr. Van Dam? Anything bigger? Can we see anything else we can see? But I'm happy to be joined, of course, by the great Chris Lavoie and Jim Ward on the West Coast and the luminous, brilliant Tina Dupuy here with me. Tina, you up for taking some calls?
Yeah, let's do it.
Okay, Chris, let me ask you this.
Yep.
Is Bill from California, who hates Obama, still on the line?
Yes, Bill from California is on the line.
This gentleman has been waiting so long. I am so grateful to him for staying on the phone. Bill, good morning, sir. Good Friday to you. You're on the Stephanie Miller Show.
How are you doing?
Not too bad.
Let me get you, I'm disappointed I'm not talking to Stephanie because I love her. She is the funniest lady out there, and the funniest lady.
Yeah, I know. Your life sucks, man. You're stuck with me. I mean, you wait, and you waited an hour on the phone to talk to a disappointment like me. So I feel really bad.
No. You're good. You're holding up her liberal values. But
well, look. If it's any consolation, I pass for lesbian in lots of bars. So there's that. So tell me what's going on, Bill. What are you feeling?
I'm going to make this short and sweet. I think the president lied because of two things. When you say, let me make this perfectly clear at the beginning of a statement, and when you say period at the end of a statement. So he lied.
Okay, let's say I agree with that.
He did say period once, yes.
Let's say I agree with that, okay? And he lied to try and save American lives and get health care to more people, and the insurance companies are thwarting him in that effort. How do you feel about that?
Well, I don't think that he's really doing the job that this law is doing the job it's supposed to do. And the reason I believe that is because it's hurting people to help people. You don't make a law to hurt people and then to help other people.
If this law gets people better and cheaper coverage, is it hurting them?
No.
And is the law hurting them, or are the insurance companies that are dropping these people hurting them?
Well, one thing that's confusion because you're saying that the insurance company is the fault, and I'm saying the bill is the fault. Until the truth comes out, who's really at fault?
Well, I mean, are insurance companies being victimized by this, Bill? I mean, are the insurance companies innocent victims here that we're just helping Americans and doing right by everyone and not exploiting or cheating or defrauding anyone?
I don't think any politician or big businesses are innocent victims. So, no, I'm pretty sure they're not innocent victims in it. But I'm just saying, why would you make a law to hurt people just to help other people? It's hurting me. I lost my insurance, my job. We got in the letter. They're going to drop us.
Wait, I'm sorry. Who sent the letter?
Your employer's going to drop you?
Your employer or your insurance company?
My employer sent us a letter. Well, my employer went to a union, and they sent us a letter. When our contract is up, they said we might have to look for other insurance.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
When our contract is up in March.
Will your employer continue to provide insurance?
We won't know that until March 1st, until March 3rd.
Does your employer employ more than 50 people?
Yes, it does.
So they'll continue to provide you insurance?
That's what the law says, right?
And presumably,
right.
So
it's not ending the insurance, it's just changing.
Right. And presumably, due to the exchanges, your employer will now have the option of getting you a plan that will save them money while providing better coverage.
But it's going to be more expensive.
How do you know that? Who's told you
because
that?
Because it's already going up, our insurance has already gone up already.
Well, that's the insurance company jacking up the rates before the law goes into effect, right?
Well, we get our insurance through our union, they're the one who manage our insurance.
Wait a minute, does your employer provide the insurance or does your union provide the insurance?
The employer pays into it and so do we, but the union manages it.
Okay, so have you contacted your union reps about what plan they will be giving to replace this previous plan?
Not yet, but I will be.
You probably should.
Okay, maybe take a break from calling the president a liar and find out what your life's going to look like once the dust settles on this thing. Because you know in a year from now, and you know this, Bill, in a year from now when these benefits have begun to take effect, and you know the White House is going to do everything to make sure that happens before Election Day 2014, no one's going to be talking about these website glitches or early out-of-the-gate cock-ups. You know that, right? So call your employer, call your union, see how it's going to look. I'm sympathetic, but I think you want to get both sides of the story.
Yeah.
Back with your calls on Stephanie Miller right after this.
Stephanie Miller.
In the first grade, my friend Rosie and I made a pact to marry Bert and Ernie. Then we found out we both wanted Ernie. We didn't speak again until middle school.
This is the Stephanie Miller Show. I'm John Fiegelsang. Been very, very happy to spend the day with you guys. It's a pleasure to fill in for Steph, and I'll be here taking your calls till the 12 noon mark or 9 a.m. mark on the West Coast at 1-800-STEPH-12, joined by the great Tina Dupuis here in the New York Bureau. Guys, last night was my first night like not sleeping in a hotel bed since September 11th.
Thank you, Georgie Jessel.
I've been just living
Welcome
in a van.
Welcome home.
You have no idea. I've never worked on a film like this. I mean, we were just going 12-hour days every day. This documentary director has two Oscar nominations. He has Emmys and Peabodys, and he does great films, and I'm proud to work with him. But, my God, it was just, and every day the film's about the American dream, and we were talking with a lot of people who find it out of reach, and homeless shelters, and I mean, we were in the public school system, we were in prisons, it through the North and the South, it's been quite a ride. Nice to be back.
And I take it you didn't have a J.J. Abrams size budget.
We did not, in fact, have a, no, but you know what, Shia LaBeouf hasn't been cast in episode 7 yet, so I don't mind.
Okay, good.
Until that happens, I'm okay with it. We're going to be taking your calls, but Tina, what did you make of Election Day this week?
That was, I met Bill de Blasio about 6 months ago, and he was like, I looked at him, and I was like, well, he's tall. He kind of looks like a mayor, but there's absolutely no chance that this dude will ever, like, make hay. And then when Anthony Weiner came out with his wiener, that was the week that Bill de Blasio went and got himself arrested to protest a hospital closing. And I just thought that was brilliant. I thought that was a brilliant way to change the conversation. I donated $100 to him for bail money.
And it's something that the media didn't really cover too much nationwide. Everyone was talking about Christine Quinn, and the mayor's office was kind of handed to her on a platter a few months ago.
Absolutely. But, locally, people started paying attention to Bill de Blasio at that moment. I mean, someone who was able to, lay his gigantic body on the gears of this hospital clothing.
I got to give credit to The Nation as well. It was the week that The Nation endorsed Bill de Blasio for mayor that he hit number one in the polls. And I really think that for informed New Yorkers who pay attention, even if they don't read The Nation, hearing that endorsement meant a lot.
And his endorsement by the Times. I mean, this is a weird cycle for endorsements. I mean, the New York Times and the New York Post and the Daily News all endorsed Quinn.
Yeah.
And she came in third. It was a really weird primary where identity politics was turned on its ear. The gays didn't vote for the gay candidate. Mm-hmm. The Jews didn't vote for the Jewish candidate. I mean, it was like women didn't vote for the female candidate. Like, I mean, it was really black women didn't vote for the black candidate.
Guys who emailed pictures of their junk did not turn out.
No, they
did not show up in force.
They did not.
But I gotta say, it's pretty inspiring. People keep saying, well, is he gonna be the liberal Giuliani or the liberal Bloomberg? And I'm like, how about we shift away from that paradigm and think maybe he'll be New York's Jerry Brown?
Yeah.
And actually take a bunch of those crazy liberal ideas, implement them, make a lot of people angry the first year, and then you'll start to see results.
During the primary, said that he admires Mayor LaGuardia, who, you know, saved the subway system because it was they were all privately owned and they were going broke because the riders, the strap hangers, would not pay more than 5 cents for a subway fare.
Yeah.
It was during the Great Depression. Mayor LaGuardia also got the first pilot program for food stamps in Brooklyn. Mm-hmm. Was able to have that in Brooklyn during the Great Depression when people were hurting the most. And the one thing that I did hear de Blasio say before he was, before he was a front runner, was that during the Great Depression, and I've never heard anyone say this before, a politician, during the Great Depression, FDR didn't say, we will help you once the economy gets better.
Mm-hmm.
No one ever said that during the Great Depression. They said, we're going to help you now, and we're going to get through this. And so it's that kind of populism that really resonated with people who have fallen through the cracks in New York.
I agree. It's going to be great watching him, but not quite as great as watching Chris Christie spend the next 3.5 years trying to suck up to a Tea Party base that hates him. That's going to
be
fun. Wait till you see right-wing Chris Christie until, I would say, probably summer 2014 when he'll come out. In 2016, he'll come out in favor of marriage equality. But
the voters didn't give him a mandate. I mean, I know there wasn't a very, no one knows who was running.
Yeah.
But they didn't give him a mandate because they voted, overturned by voter referendum to raise the minimum wage. And that was something that Chris Christie came out against.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not like, so they like him as a personality, I guess.
I like him as a personality.
Fine, right. but, not exactly his policies. So he wasn't given a mandate to do to implement all of that stuff,
mm-hmm.
Which I found to be incredibly interesting in New Jersey.
All right, why don't we take some calls here on the Steph Show?
Yeah.
Chris, do we still have three Richards in Chicago on hold at once?
We sure do. Let's go
to
the first
Richard.
Let's
go to Richard number one. Hi, Richard from Chicago. You're on the Stephanie Miller Show.
Hey, how you doing?
Great. Thanks for waiting.
I listen to WCPT because I marvel at the sophistication of your propaganda tactics.
Oh, do you? Tell me, please, please. Tell me about how we're propagandist.
Well, I'd like to start with the term snake in the creation.
Yeah, well, yeah, fairness, it's not called a snake in the Bible. It is called a serpent.
Can I talk, or are you just going to run? I'm going to call it.
Yeah.
It is.
Go ahead. You know what? Go ahead and talk. I was agreeing with you. Go ahead.
It is our show, though.
It does say serpent, but you do take Collins, and I just need to say that the creation, do you mean intelligent design, and you're just using the word creation and creationism? I mean, do you mean intelligent design to put into schools versus evolution? Or
when you say intelligent design, are you talking about a literal interpretation of Genesis?
No. I'm talking
about
intelligent design is that, in that something has to create something else. You can't have nothing creating something.
I agree. I believe in God, mister. I'm not an atheist.
Okay, so it doesn't say snake. It says serpent. It was probably something that was walking because God says in 14 that he makes him crawl on his belly from then on.
But you don't believe in Genesis as literal facts. So why are you upset about that?
I'm just saying you're misusing. You're trying to evoke a reaction from your listeners that paint all Christians as super idiots.
No. I actually think that creationism is Satan's plot to make Christians look like idiots because it's got nothing to do with Christ.
Well, if you don't have a Genesis account, then you don't have Jesus as an offspring of Adam.
Nonsense. Who cares? We're all offspring of Adam. Well, who cares? How does believing in Genesis as literal fact, which you don't, how does believing in that make you a better person or a better Christian?
When you talk about that Christians saying that we're created from dirt. Well, evolution says the exact same thing, that we came from a primordial, well, I guess mud.
We come from ooze, yes, but I'm not offended by that notion.
So, neither am I. Because we are broke down, if we take all the water out of us, we become a big pile of dust. That's just what happens.
Okay, yeah, I agree with you. Yeah. We're talking science.
So that account is a very stable way of thinking. When you talk about creation and evolution debate in schools, you have a tremendously anti-Christian, atheistic push to drive religion out of the minds of students.
In science class, that's no place for origin theories of any religion. Do you support teaching Native American beliefs that a giant turtle was there at the creation of Earth? Because what are we talking about here? We're talking about one unauthorized God fan club's creation theory, right?
Yes, I have no.
Which you don't take as literal fact. So should that be taught in science class?
There's a lot to the Genesis that I believe is viable facts. Now,
do you believe that women have painful childbirth and monthly menstruation as punishment for this transgression with the serpent that wasn't a snake?
Let's stick to the call-in premise, which is creationism versus evolution.
He asked you a question, Richard.
Dude, I'm asking you what you claim to believe and not believe in, because I don't understand where you're coming from. You don't take it as literal fact, but you're angry that people want it in science class?
You're trying to push me down a path, and that's not what this call is about.
I'm a propagandist, remember?
I know you are.
Okay. So what's your point? What's your point, Richard? What are you mad at me for? I don't want creationism. I don't want any religion's theory taught in science class. I want it taught in religion class, and I want the debate taught in social studies class. Who am I? I'm a conservative when it comes to separation of church and state.
And I'm a conservative. That means if somebody's going to challenge your belief systems in a classroom with held captives, that you can challenge those belief systems.
Held captives? Well, then you're just being silly. Is she gone? Held captives. Yeah. You know what? If you're a kid, you're allowed to consider that because it's true if you're a kid. But give me a break. Can we get a smart creationist to call in?
No, I don't think so.
Let's go to another Richard in Chicago from the pool.
All right. Hey, Richard, you're on the air.
Hey, sorry that this guy is trying to represent Chicago, but good Lord, I almost fell
and Richards.
Of my chair.
I took him serious. Look, it's like I know the Bible. I know what it says, man. Don't play dumb with me.
Don, you're coming with guns blazing this morning, and thank God you are. Listen, I called in mainly because I went to Steph's debate last night with Meta.
Yeah, tell us about it.
She was awesome.
Tell us about the debate. It was Stephanie and Michael Medved.
It's Stephanie and Michael Medved. The room was set up, and I got to be a VIP, which was awesome. But the room was set up where the right was on the right and the left was on the left. So his fans were on the right side of the room, and we were on the left side, of the room.
Evenly mixed crowd?
It was a pretty even, in terms of numbers, I'd say yes. And I think that was by design and how the tickets were sold and blah, blah, blah. But that's okay. But in terms of the support of her versus him, the crowd was much more leaning towards Stephanie, and largely because she's incredibly quick in person. Mm-hmm. On the show, I know you've got to deal with a lot of different things from a technology standpoint, but she's incredibly quick in person. And so there were a lot of things that he said that I don't think he realized that she was going to come back and hold him on, and she did a great job of that.
That's right.
It was just great. You know, I sat in the front row, and the crowd was yelling at both of them. You know, I yelled at him at least a dozen times because of some of the insanity that came out of his mouth. And now he, on a number of occasions, just used some talking points from the echo chamber that we all, you know, talk about. He's a smart guy. We all know that.
Sure.
And Stephanie is a smart, smart woman. And she did not, it wasn't one of those situations where she was going to let this be Michael Medved sort of dominating her. She brought the sledgehammer, and there were a number of occasions where she just hit him right over the head with it, and he couldn't respond because he knew that if he said anything, he would, one, either contradict himself, or two, he would sound so incredibly stupid, and it would further validate the sanity of what the John Fugelsangs and the Stephanie Millers and the Ed Schultz of the world are talking about on the radio. So it was great to be there, and I was so excited and had a really good time, and I can't wait till she's here I think it's in April.
And that's
also
right.
I just wanted to commend you on having that young man, Zach, on. What a great, great future. I was sitting listening to him talk, and I thought, this kid is part of our, this is the better part of our future. I'm excited about that part of our future. It was so cool to hear him. He was so cogent and patient, and he had done his homework and, you know, make sure this kid gets through college, because he's going to be one of those future stars. At least that's kind of what I
think. I think so too. I was proud to have him as a guest on my Viewpoint show, and I'm proud to have him as part of this PBS film that we're doing. So I thank you for the call, Richard. And we have one more segment. We'll be taking a few more calls and more with Tina Dupuy. This is the Stephanie Miller Show. A couple of big announcements coming up after the break, so I would encourage you to stick around. I got some stuff you'll want to hear. Don't go away.
Well, at least it's a good place to see celebrities.
It's the Stephanie Miller Show. Stephanie Miller.
Wow. Hey, I want to thank you so much, Chris Lavoie, because you finally played some Lou Reed for me. I've been asking all day.
You know,
some Lou Reed or some Velvets, and you finally played
some. We have our big Clear Channel computer in here that holds all of the music that Clear Channel here in Los Angeles plays. They don't have a single Lou Reed song.
That's evil.
Really? Wildside?
Today
is the perfect day.
Oh, really? I know. Well, it's a big loss here in New York. I was waxing rhapsodic over Lou for an hour earlier in the show.
I'm sorry.
But that's okay. That's okay. Hey, listen.
But I figured MC Hammer would do.
You know what? Really, basically the same thing.
Yeah, sure.
MC Hammer's songs about transvestites and heroism on the Lower East Side, of course, were one of the defining lights of pop music in the early 90s, and his gritty realism and sense of urgency. And really, when you combine his love of 50s doo-wop with the dirty street poetry of Burroughs and Hubert Selby, only MC Hammer could create lyrics like that. And,
or Fergie.
Who could forget, I'm Waiting for My Man, Hammer Time. So these are great songs he gave us.
Yes.
I'm Waiting for My Man.
Or Fergie.
My London Bridge is going down.
Fergalicious.
He's the one rapper who hasn't been caught with a transvestite.
No, that is true.
Bowie did a great cover of I'm Waiting for My Man. That's on the Almost Famous soundtrack. Yeah.
Uh-huh. And Bowie actually did a duet of Dirty Boulevard with Lou Reed live a couple years ago. Mm. So Bowie co-produced Walk on the Wild Side. Those guys have quite a history, and God only knows what went down with them and Iggy Pop in Berlin. God only knows what went down in Berlin with those guys. I'm here with the great Tina Dupuy. Tina, what's going to be the big story of next week?
Ooh, big story of next week. I think we're still going to be on the Obamacare bandwagon.
Yep.
Like, we're still going to be ironing out the details. Like that caller who called in earlier kind of illustrated for us, he's mad at Obama for lying, but then he doesn't actually know what is going on with his own coverage. I think there's a lot of Americans who are going through that. You know, they're not able to get access to the website to let them know exactly what's going on. But, you know, I think a lot of Americans have gotten letters from their insurers going, you know, okay, there's something's because of the new healthcare law, something is going to change, which gives people obvious anxiety. The thing with healthcare is that it's very personal, and that gets people, you know, it hits people where they live in the most literal sense. So, that's going to be a big story.
But the real question is Obama more of a communist or a Nazi?
Exactly. Because communists and Nazis were always an axis.
Right.
They were always partners, the communists and the Nazis. I think that people are going to scream so loud about how Obama's a liar to avoid having to hear 60 Minutes retract a story that shows that the Benghazi liar who they used to claim Obama was a liar last week is, in fact, a big fat liar.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. This is going to be a big deal.
Yeah, but poor that's Laura lies. Those are lies we can believe in. Lies we can believe in. You know what? Not poor Laura Logan. God bless her. But you know what? They didn't fact check this.
Exactly.
Guy.
Yeah.
And the biggest problem in our media now is watching them chase the Fox audience. And here's the thing: the Fox audience really wants to be lied to, They want to be told that's that they've been right about everything.
That's right.
They were right to impeach Clinton and right to support two wars off the books while cutting taxes for millionaires. 60 Minutes audience, they don't want to be lied to. They don't want to be in the bubble. They want to be informed and challenged. And that's why you can't get away with it.
Right.
And
right.
Other networks need to take note. Trying to be Fox Light isn't going to help you.
You know what is definitely not Fox Light?
A sexy liberal tour?
In Madison, Wisconsin.
No way!
There was a girl named Stephanie who gathered a ragtag band of progressive jesters to rid the land of the great conservative darkness. And history was made in the great city of Madison when the sexy liberal comedy tour was born.
Seems like a long time ago.
And now is their triumphant midterm election return.
We're putting the band back together.
Yes, we can.
On March 29th, Stephanie Miller and her merry, marauding collection of sexy liberal comics will return to where it all started, the Barrymore Theater in Madison, Wisconsin. Tickets are available online at barrymorelive.com. Don't miss the midterm mayhem and an early Scott Walker retirement party.
Take care now. Bye-bye then.
That's the Stephanie Miller Sexy Liberal Comedy Tour, March 29th at the Barrymore Theater. Go to barrymorelive.com.
Going to be a great show, and let's not forget the big show in Seattle next month, Paramount Theater, on the 16th of December. It's going to be our first sexy liberal Chris McQuanzica holiday orgy of leftist fun, and you almost jumped to that. So if you're anywhere in the state of Washington or the entire Pacific Northwest, you got to come. It's going to be a big party. I'm hoping we're going to have some special guests we can hype too.
I'm sure we would. And I know that Rocky Mountain Mike and some very special players are going to be doing some live Rocky Mountain Mike bits.
Ah, I didn't even know.
Yeah.
Terrific. Okay, good. So I won't have to open that show. That'll be great. I can't wait. And can I make another announcement about a non-sexy liberal-related show?
Sure.
I'm doing a big show next week in Kansas City that I want everyone to know about. It's going to be a show benefiting the LBGT Center for Kansas City, and the organization is called Like Me, and it's the Like Me Lighthouse. And I was invited to do this with some really good friends of mine. It's going to be myself with Margaret Cho, Judy Gold, and Shelley Wright.
When Shelley Wright was on with us a few weeks ago, she talked about this.
Yes, so that show is almost upon us. It's Wednesday, November 13th at 7 p.m. at the Folly Theater. You can go to follytheater.org. That's F-O-L-L-Y, theater.org. And again, Margaret Cho, Judy Gold, myself, and Shelley Wright. I mean, that's 75% a great show. You know, you factor me out of it. Yeah. So I really, really hope you guys can come. And the best part about this show is the Westboro Baptist Church has announced on their website that they are picketing.
Sweet.
Fantastic.
Yes. So if you want a chance to see
Mazel tov.
What those revoltingly fake Christians do, if you want a chance to be, you know, donating to a good cause that helps LBGT youth, come on down to the big show, and be sure you come to see us in Seattle for the Big Sexy Liberal Extravaganza. Tina, how can the folks follow you?
You can follow me on Twitter at Tina Dupuy, or go to my website, tinadupuy.com.
Fantastic. I'm the John Fugelsang page on the Facebook and all that other fun stuff. Chris, really great to be with you again.
Awesome,
Jim,
to be with
you
guys.
Thank you. Yeah, it's always fun. Stephanie will be back on Monday. I will be on The Ed Show tonight on MSNBC and at Laughing Liberally on the Lower East Side tonight, 8 p.m. Good night, folks.